Thank you. Okay. Alrighty. All right. My name is Dory. I'm a compulsive overeater, and this is the part where I qualify for saying, I'm like you, and kind of like and hopefully the words that come out of my mouth today will be something that will be of use for your own recovery programs. So I'd like to start with a prayer. I'll start with the third step prayer just because it helps me to get myself centered. God, I offer myself to thee to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. And Lord, I would add, please allow me to have the words you want me to use and not mine. Amen. Okay, so am I a compulsive overeater? Why, yes, I am. I think I probably have been a compulsive overeater when I was a very small child. In fact, I came to OA in 2003 and was in the program, working a pretty solid program, which we'll talk a little bit about later, and left the program in about 2016. I'll talk about that as well. And while I was out of program, I went to, at some point, I was returning on gaining my weight that I had been maintaining for a good, that was good 13 years. And so I started going to a weight management program and not doing well with it at all. And finally, they recommended to me that I go see a psychologist. And I thought, well, okay. And I myself am a psychologist, which is kind of an interesting thing. So talk about a humbling kind of a circumstance. Anyway, I went to her, and that between the two of us, we determined that the origin of my compulsive overeating was really started when I was a baby, pretty much, because my mother, by the time I came around, I was the 10th of 12 children. The two babies after me were not did not live. So I was the youngest of eight living children, and the first two also had died. And by that time, my mother was in her 40s. She was really, I think, pretty much there to just take care of my basic needs. Only I was the kind of person who had an ego that said, "Hey, I need to know that I'm really, really special. Like the world lights up because I exist." That's how I was created. So I believe from a really young age, I had the spirit of not enough. And so because of that, I was always having this emptiness inside I wanted to fill. It makes perfect sense to me that that's what it is. And of course, naturally, it would be food to begin with, although I started drinking alcohol when I was 8 years old. And coffee, by the way, it's kind of a I'm kind of an interesting kid that way. But anyway, so I grew up in a family where food was pretty important. And I can remember for me, whenever I would go to family gatherings, it really wasn't about the people I was going to meet, it was the food I was going to eat. And I remember as a very young child going with my father. We lived about 18 miles away from St. Cloud, Minnesota, which is where I live currently. And I knew he had to go pick up supplies for his business. And I thought, well, I'll just drive with dad. And it wasn't because I wanted to spend time with my father. It was because I knew he was likely going to go to a place very much like McDonald's and I could eat some food with him. And then I also remember on Friday nights, one of my favorite activities was to sit with my sister and eat foods that were, full of lots of carbs and watch TV. And so it was always that kind of thing. But I think my first glimmer that there was probably something not quite right about this, even though I had gone to Weight Watchers prior to this, and even though I think when I was maybe age 16, I went to one meeting of Overeaters Anonymous and thought it was a cult. I joined that with my oldest sister. Anyway, I think I really got the inkling that I had problems with compulsive eating when I went away to college. And of course, I gained the freshman 15, but probably another 20, 30 pounds. I couldn't really tell you. But I remember walking 13 blocks from my school to a pie shop close by and buying a pie. And not because I wanted to share this with all my college buddies. No, I took that pie, went back to my room, locked the door, and ate that until I was so physically sick and also so overwhelmed with the sugar that I pretty much passed out. Now, one would think it was the kind of pie that really should have been refrigerated, and it wasn't. I did not take it out to the kitchen. I put it underneath my bed with the dust bunnies. And then when I awoke, I'm not sure when, probably sometime in the middle of the night, I consumed the rest of it, took that pie tin, didn't want to go back to the pie shop and get my deposit back. Gosh, no. And I hid it in the trash in our communal kitchen. Again, didn't want to let anybody know about it. And of course, in my head, I thought, this is something not quite right, Dory. And also in my head was, well, yeah, but it's just an anomaly. It's a one-time deal. You're not going to do this again. Well, yeah, I did. And I did, and I did, and I did. So yes, I had, and we know that this is progressive disease. There's just no question about it. It always is progression. It always is progressive. And when we, when we can treat it, we've also got to treat at a level that's a little higher than we were when it first began. Let me just tell you, I've tried a number of different things, which I think many of us have. I told you I went to Weight Watchers. I probably went to that 8, 9 times. I've gone to Jenny Craig. I've gone to Nutrisystems. I went to another weight loss program. I'm not quite sure. And the two things that were probably the goofiest things I ever did was to do aversion therapy, where I was to watch myself eating my favorite foods. I don't know if you've ever watched as you're chewing. It's not particularly pleasant. It did, hinder it a little bit, but not, it didn't totally just, take care of it for me. But the other thing that I did that was really kind of insane was to go ahead and have gastric bypass surgery, which meant that I absolutely altered my digestive tract, how my digestive system. This was in 1984, and I did it on a lark. So yes, my whole life I've always struggled with a weight condition when truly it was a disease that was building up. By the way, after I had my gastric bypass, I also became a flaming alcoholic. And that's often is a side effect of that because you metabolize alcohol differently. And I got into recovery with alcohol from alcohol in 1989, or I should say abstinence. I had the wonderful gift of God saying, guess what? I'm going to take this addiction away from you, or the urge, the craving for alcohol away from you. Now, I didn't pray for it, didn't ask for it, and I got that gift. And I thought, okay, that got my attention. So it said, okay, you got to start to pay attention to this thing called higher power. And so I did. However, I went to one AA meeting and I thought, oh boy, these people want too much from me. They want to get to know me. Pretty scary. And I thought, oh, and it's a cult. It was in my head. But that didn't mean I didn't work on that spiritual part of this deal. So I did the spiritual recovery. And then what went on, by that time, after I got sober, then I decided it was probably time to do something with my life that was actually going to be better for the human beings other than just selling stuff. I could sell like there was no tomorrow. I knew that was kind of it was all fine and dandy, but what does it mean in the meaning of life? And I decided to go back to school and I picked up a degree, continued my degree as a master's of psychology and then a doctorate in psychology. And I had the wonder again on a whim. I went ahead and applied for a doctoral internship at Hazelden, which is a world known treatment center in Minnesota. I just did it on a whim and got it. And oh my gosh, I that's when I really started to understand about 12-step recovery. While I was there, I saw people like myself who were in recovery or in abstinence from alcohol or other substance uses, but they also had this thing we've got, this eating deal we've got, this addiction, a switched addiction to food. And so with those ladies and men, I would go to meeting, I would start to look for meetings, and I was looking for the right OA meeting. Right, probably when I started there in about 1999, and I finally found a group that was really very good for me in 2003. I went to a meeting, an OA HOW meeting, which was very, very helpful for me. I needed that structure. I needed the honesty of the program, and I honestly had to work that program, and I did. And I was relieved of 100 pounds of excess weight by the grace of my higher power. Within a little over a year, and I was able to maintain that weight loss until 2013, when I had all of a sudden discovered I had kidney cancer, and that just That really, I just was mad. I was mad at God, and I kept saying, "How did you let me do this? You did this. I worked really hard on this thing." I was just very angry. And I'm talking about I, because by that time, with the kind of work I was doing, it was a very structured program. And because I was a very structured program, I started to ease God out and let God, I was saying, "Well, no, I'm doing all these things. I'm making my calls, and I'm weighing and measuring, and all the things of that program." And I think so. I definitely was not in right spiritual condition. So that by 2016, I was really struggling with my abstinence. Also, in that meantime, starting in 2014, I lost six of my seven living siblings. So I only have one sibling now. So a lot of grief going on, a lot of anger at God about just, that the fact that I even had a physical thing after taking good care of myself for those 10 years. And I stopped. I left OA. So in that meantime, when I didn't come back to OA until 2020, April of 2020, and in the meantime, I had regained 80 of my pounds out of the 100-pound weight loss. And so when I returned, I was looking for the right group to be a part of, and I found a group called OA in Action, and that's been the group that I've been with. My abstinence date is May 29th of 2020. And by the grace of God, I have been relieved of 60 of those 80 pounds that I had regained. And I'm it's between God, and my it's between my higher power, and me, I guess, as far as if I'm to go further. Although I feel very healthy and really am enjoying a really good health right now. So that's my story. And now what I'd like to do. Something like I've been talking about 12 minutes. So now I want to talk a little bit about some other things that are there. And one of the things that's really been coming to me recently is, I think probably with the theme of the 4th of July and the freedom, is the various freedoms that we receive from this program, from recovery. It's the promises. We're talking about the promises. These are akin to what was read earlier. But the and what I lately what I've been using is the Voices of Recovery has been the book that I'm working out of reading and writing assignments. So I've worked on this, and on July 23rd, this person said this. What the writing says this. It says, "For many of us, this freedom came when we took step three and turned the entire problem over to our higher power." So that's found on page 20 of the 12 and 12. The 12th step of Overeaters Anonymous talks about the qualities we gain as a result of working the 12 steps. But the word freedom appears in so many times in all of our literature. I began to think about the freedoms from my disease I gained by working each of the steps of Overeaters Anonymous. And then this person details these things. So for first, the first step, we get the freedom from the obsession of food. And that is absolutely, the thing that we really have there. I'll talk more about that. But it's that whole thing, kind of that in those basic terms. I have no control over this thing. And then, of course, the second step is, I think my higher power can. I've got some hope, and that's the just step two. She says, or he or she says, it's the freedom from insanity and hopelessness, and that truly is the case. That's not hopeless. It's not hopeless if I rely on my higher power to help me with this deal. And then step three says, I can't, my higher power can. I think I'll let my higher power do this. And so the third step that they say is freedom from the bondage of self, which I think, the third step prayer really says it all, because I think every one of us has got that I can do this thing myself. We dance with this all the time. I can do it. I can do it. I can do it. Well, we can't do it. The best part about the third step, and that sometimes I think we forget, is that it's not just turning over our problems with our disease or our illness or our obsession or our compulsion, but it's also saying, okay, higher power, I'm trusting you to take care of the whole shoot and match, everything that has any meaning in my life, Lord. I'm giving it to you. And then, of course, moving on, we know that one of the biggest problems that we have is dishonesty. And we can talk about, we can play games with ourselves, saying, "Nah, there's no problem. I'm gaining 80 pounds, and I don't really think, well, gosh, maybe I should do something about this," that kind of thing. But freedom. So she, this person, I keep on saying she. I don't know why I always think it's females who write this stuff, but I'm sure it's not. Freedom from dishonesty is step 12 or step four. Step five, freedom from isolation. I just had somebody speaking to me this morning about how doing the fifth step really allowed that person to actually trust that she's just like everybody else. She can share what's going on, and she's not going to get judged. Beautiful. That's that freedom of isolation. We know isolation is one of the hallmarks of our disease. So yeah, we've got freedom from that. Step six, kind of interesting, freedom from running the show. I love that because I think about it. You know, when I my favorite stuff that I love to read is the big book when they're talking, we're getting ourselves prepared for the fourth step where it talks about we all love to be the directors. We all love to say, hey, if only these people would do it the way I see it, we'd be absolutely perfect. I don't know what their problem is. So, you know, it's that kind of a thing. Freedom from self-reliance is step seven. Yep. And that's that part of saying, okay, I don't know what you're going to turn me into, Lord, but I'm going to let you do it. Eight, freedom from blame. We know that that's the whole thing where we're going to look at who we need to ask, make amends to. Yeah, so we're not blaming them. We're just saying this is our partner, you know, going from there. Nine, freedom from fear of people. Yeah, I think there's a part of what really blocks us. I know many people leave the program. They leave it at four and they leave it at eight and nine because they have to, that's the most vulnerable steps. And you know, it's that fear of people, it says. Yeah, you've got freedom from fear of people because one of the things we know is if we say we're sorry, they may not accept it. You know, and that's very fear-provoking. 10 says freedom from complacency. And yeah, I think that's one of those things. Well, you know, we know that we have to keep on. One of the things we say in this program is if you are stopping, if you're resting on your laurels, you're actually going backwards. You know, that we always have to keep abreast of this is where I am. How am I measuring up to the things that I say I wish to do? So every morning I start and say, Lord, I ask you to replace my will with yours. I ask you to replace procrastination with next right action. You know, those are the things that I know that are there. And then, of course, at the end of the day, take a look and say, well, how'd you do, Dory? 11, freedom from loneliness. That's the beauty of this thing because we know actually the whole point of 12-step recovery. Is that we develop a relationship with the divine, with the spiritual, something outside of ourselves. That's the whole point. And the best part is when that's in place, you're gonna know that at any moment, your higher power is right there with you, which is pretty cool to know. And of course, the last one, 12, freedom from lack of purpose, which is, of course, yeah, many of us say, what the heck is the meaning of life? Well, of course, step 12 is about actually sharing this thing. We say we can't keep it unless we share it. And so that's the piece that says, yep, that's part of what I need to do. I'm going to end with one other thing that was found on July 29th. Oh, good. I got plenty of time here. Okay. And that is, again, also in the 12 and 12, and I'll read it to you. Says, we are free at last. And this is found on page 51 of the OA 12 and 12. And it says, on my bike ride, I see the tower of the state prison far in the distance. I am reminded of the freedom I have from the prison of compulsive overeating. I am grateful that I have recovery, but am mindful that the disease is always, always there on the horizon. OA is a spiritual program. It means living a spiritual life. There's more there, but I want to really comment on a number of different points. Number one, when I was reading that, even though it's always interesting, they've got these questions that are related to this from, they've got a workbook that goes along with this thing. And I like them, but I also, there's things when I read this, I think, oh, God, I want to talk about this. And one of the things that came to me when I was reading that, do you know when anybody who is incarcerated leaves prison for the most part? They're going to have one or two situations. Number one, they're going to either be on probation or they're going to be on parole. And those two things usually say you're going to demonstrate that you have been recovered, that you have your behavior is going to show that you're not going to return to the behaviors that you had that got you incarcerated. So it makes some sense that there's this part that says, you know, you got to suit up and play. You got to show that you really are going to be falling, or your butt is going back into that prison. Well, with us, what we have is something very similar. We've been in bondage. We know we've been in bondage. And we also know we have a reprieve. It's a daily reprieve. And it says it's based on our fit spiritual condition. So it goes right on back to the whole intent of this program, which is to stay in contact, conscious contact with our something greater than ourselves. So when you look at that, you think, okay, and one of the things I love when people say, you know what, we're all on the same road of recovery and we're all within 3 feet of the ditch on either side. And we need to constantly keep that in mind, that we're going to stay on that path, the path to recovery, the path to freedom. So, and I think that's also very true. So it's one of those things of saying, okay. And the thing that I will say I'm going to end with, we have one decision and one decision only to make every day. And that decision is today, am I going to be in recovery or am I going to be in relapse? If we say we're going to be in relapse, we know what that's going to lead. If we say we're going to be in recovery, we have a reasonable chance of having the reprieve. And with that, I'll pass. Oh, just went over a little bit.